is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Our next show is an interview with Katie Wheeler that was recorded back in 2017, and it's about collecting polystyrene. The 2017 dates have been removed from this recording, and the collection dates for the current 2019 is Saturday, January 19th, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sunday, January 20th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Enjoy. Hello, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and we're at the UCCE office in downtown Sonora, right next to Superior Court, and I am talking to Tuolumne Master Gardener Katie Wheeler. Hello, Katie.
Hey, Deb.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you also.
And Katie, you are right now planning for a really popular event, and it's called Save Our Polystyrene.
Yes, we started off with calling it Save Our Styrofoam, SOS, but unfortunately Styrofoam happens to be a brand name, and so we had to change to polystyrene and call it the generic name for what it is. But I'm in charge of this project as well as Peggy Andrews. Peggy has been a master gardener for actually longer than myself. I graduated in 2006, and Peggy lives in Groveland. And for many years, since 2011 or 2012, she was collecting polystyrene at the fire station in Groveland. They were very gracious in allowing us to store it there, because as we all know, it takes up a lot of space. But anyway, she and her husband John would truck multiple truckloads and trailer loads of polystyrene into Sonora, and we have worked with waste management to accomplish this collection. Waste management has been very gracious in allowing us space and also the use of the big 40-yard bins that we collect the polystyrene in. They have never charged us. They have been more than willing to go out of their way to help accommodate us in our needs. It's been a great community effort.
Now, when are you planning? When is this first event? And usually you try to do two a year, isn't that right?
Yes. Yeah, we started off with just doing one a year, but the need was so great that Peggy and I took over about 2011, 2012, something like that. And we have done two collections every year, always in January. The purpose of doing one in January is to save people having to store the polystyrene for very long after getting a lot of, you know, gifts at Christmas time packed in polystyrene. So we do that as a community. Well, the whole thing is a community service. But we also have a lot of people in this county that get medications on a regular basis stored in polystyrene. And some of them get it off as often as twice a month. So you can imagine how much individual people collect and the difficulty in storing it for any length of time.
Before I forget, what's the date? And what's the address as far as where they would take their polystyrene?
That has brought polystyrene to us knows exactly where we are. But we are, it's called Microtronics Way. It is the cross street of Waste Management where their normal recycling facility is. And all you do is turn off of Tuolumne Road or Standard Road and just follow the signs. Yeah, I do the hotline, quite honestly. And actually, in the middle of this year, we were not going to do a collection because there is another recycling place that opened up on Eagle Ridge near Tuolumne Road. And originally, the word from them was that they were going to be collecting polystyrene. However, that didn't happen. And in doing the hotline, I recognized that in June and July, 8 out of 10 calls were about polystyrene. And so rather than trying to wait for them to decide if they were going to do this, because it was still iffy at that point, we went ahead and did a collection in August. And so that fulfilled our two collections a year for 2017.
Which is great. Now, I think most everybody realizes why it's so important to keep the polystyrene out of the landfill, but just in case, if somebody doesn't realize, what's the problem?
Well,
what's the issue?
The genesis of this actually started in 2006. Becky Miller Cripps was our coordinator at that point, and in 2006, we had a giant class. Actually, it was taught in two times. We ended up with like 75 graduates, and we needed more activities. So Becky came up with three different ideas. I have no idea what the other two ideas were, but Styrofoam collection was almost a unanimous decision of our organization. As master gardeners, it may not sound like something that we need to be involved with. However, as stewards of the planet, we are very much responsible in making sure that everything that is used by us as people and can be recycled is recycled, as opposed to just throwing it in your garbage and putting it in landfill, which takes up ginormous amounts of space, etc. We have collected several thousand pounds of polystyrene over the years. And if you can just pick up a small piece of polystyrene and try to weigh it and see how much material would go into 1,000 pounds, you have some idea of just how much this has made a difference in our waste. And the other thing, this is really a fun project for us. I never have a difficulty in getting volunteers from our organization to help with this. First of all, it's not labor intensive. We're lifting, plastic bags of polystyrene that might weigh a pound. And the other thing is, it's a really happy experience because the community is overwhelmingly appreciative of our efforts. They always thank us. They always want to know when the next collection will be. And this is a free service offered to the county.
It's been kind of interesting because without it, there isn't anybody that is willing, at least at this point, to come and get the polystyrene and take it to a place that would recycle it. In the past, you started off with...
We started off with Tim Brown Industries, which was located down in the Stockton area. And at this point, we are working with Dart Manufacturing. The cool thing about Dart is that they will come up with an empty truck and take all of the polystyrene back to their plant in one load. Before, we used to have to bale it, and actually we had master gardeners that would transport it down to the valley to get it to Tim Brown. So the change to Dart, and actually Tim Brown, I believe, went out of business, but Dart recycles it themselves. They are located in Lodi, and anyone can literally bring polystyrene to them 7 days a week. They have an outside facility where they just have open bins, and you can just drop it off yourself.
I think they're right on Highway 12, aren't they?
Yes, it is. It's 1400 Victor Road in Lodi, okay. Or Highway 12. And if you have, like a ginormous amount of material that you're tired of taking up space in your garage or wherever, and you happen to be driving down to the valley, that's a great way to get rid of it yourself.
Which is great. And they actually, I believe we went to their plant as a field trip to find out how they do this process, and it was really fascinating. There's a lot of effort on their part to actually take it over to their processing plant, which I believe is in Southern California, and then it's, like you said,
it's melted down, and that what they do that with the colored polystyrene that you get with vegetables and meat. We started taking that many years ago, and it just needs to be clean. That should be obvious, but you'd be surprised. Anyway, it's cleaned and separated from the bulk packing polystyrene. And what they do is they amass such a quantity, they have a grinding machine that grinds up the material, compresses it, and packs it so they can load a trailer and have enough weight on it to transport it to Southern California. And it's melted down at that plant and then extruded into things like banisters, railings, picture frames, molding, all kinds of different uses.
It's amazing how many products are made out of polystyrene. And then, of course, all the cups and plates and things like that that we use. So
the biggest thing that I got out of that tour, Debbie, was the fact that I think everybody has a bad feeling about polystyrene. It's like, oh my gosh, if we could just use something else, like cardboard, like, you know, corrugated paper, you know, something like that. But they really convinced me that polystyrene is really even more recyclable if people will take the time, and weighs less and takes up far less space in packaging and stuff, and actually is more practical, even though it's kind of counterintuitive that that would be the case. But this is the best way for people, you know, for manufacturers to be able to ship things to us.
Now, kind of looking at some of your figures, that as far as collecting, it is, when you collect in January, that is the biggest collection time versus other times of the year, the second time?
Well, the second time has usually been in conjunction with the solid waste Tuolumne County effort to get hazardous waste out of the environment. And they had been doing it in June, and in 2014 they changed to May. And so we normally do collections in January again to get all the Christmas packaging, and then we pair with them. And so that's going to be probably sometime around the middle of May that they will be doing that, and we will again be, you know, pairing with them at that second collection date.
Probably one of the important things to remember is if we don't have a place to collect styrofoam for other people. So just remembering when these collection dates are is pretty important.
Well, unfortunately, I am willing to be a stopgap a little bit in that process. I happen to have a greenhouse that is totally empty at this time of the year, and I have been known to allow people to bring polystyrene to me if they're in a dire situation, or they're going to be out of town during this weekend, or they just are overwhelmed. So I don't really want to make that real public, it's under special circumstances that I will do that.
Which is really wonderful, and we can't give out your personal phone number or your address, but what they could do is call the hotline and leave a message for you, Katie. And that phone number for the hotline is area code 209-533-5912. And we're just about out of time. Is there anything else that you feel is important for people to realize or just remember these dates for January? And if they have questions, they can always call the hotline and leave a message, because I know that you man the hotline, and in addition to one of our other long-time master gardeners, Marion Chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we handle all the calls. So, yeah, if you have any questions or concerns in regarding this event, don't hesitate to call.
Thank you for everything you do, Katie. This is so important, and thank you for being on the show today.
Cool. Thank you, Debbie.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good morning. Hello. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County, and I'm at the Calaveras office today, which is located in San Andreas. I am talking to Sue Mosbacher, who is not only in charge of the Master Gardener program, she is also in charge of the Master Food Preserver program. She actually covers four counties, and that would be El Dorado, Amador, Calaveras, and Tuolumne. And good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Debbie.
It's great to see you here and have you here. And you're working on a project. I mean, every time I talk to you, you're always working on something fascinating and fun. And you're working on something I literally know nothing about, and that is a variety of different mustards.
That's right, of different mustards. And they're fairly easy to do and bursting with flavor.
And how did you pick mustard?
A few years ago, when I first started with the Master Food Preserver program, I went to a holiday event and they had a variety of mustards, and I tasted some of them and they were just so good, and they were in the little teeny jars. And the next year I made as gifts, it's kind of corny, but I called it my three mustard tiers. I had a cranberry mustard, which was pink, and then I had a honey mustard, which was very pale, and then I had a mango mustard, which was a vibrant gold color, and they were just a big hit. And I love them on sandwiches, I love them to dip with crackers, and it's something unique. And when I go to the grocery store to look at the pricing of them, they're not the cheapest things in the world, and they're fairly easy to make. So I've enjoyed making that because it's not something a lot of people make from scratch.
Do you want to talk about first?
Well, I made three of them this week. I made an Oktoberfest beer mustard, and then I made a lemon sage wine mustard and a Dijon mustard. And the Oktoberfest beer mustard was the easiest one because you take beer and you soak it with, you soak some fresh whole mustard seeds, and you let the mustard seeds absorb the beer, and then you grind it up and you mix a few other ingredients in it, and then you put it in a boiling water or steam canner, and you're good to go.
Okay, so
it's pretty easy.
Where do you get the mustard seeds from?
I buy them in bulk at a restaurant supply store, or you can buy just in the spice aisle, you can buy mustard seeds, whole mustard seeds.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. And they have brown mustard seeds, and they have golden or yellow mustard seeds. And the brown is a stronger flavor, so it depends on the flavor that you want. And with the Oktoberfest beer mustard, the type of beer you use will obviously impact the flavor. If you use a dark, strong ale or a stout, it's going to make it a much stronger mustard flavor. I like to use a Pilsner. It's a little bit less strong,
and I like the flavor. Is it more weedy? I'm not very knowledgeable about the different types of beer. I mean, beer is good, but so it's a little bit more weedy, and then that actually transfers into the flavor of the mustard, where
right.
you have more of this beer weedy flavor.
Yeah. One of my friends last year made a whole variety of mustards with different types of beer, so she could find out which kind she liked, and she was the one that said that she liked the Pilsner flavor best. And I'm not a dark beer drinker, so I figure I'm going to make it with the beer that I drink. Just like when you cook with wine, they say to cook with the wine that you like to drink, because you should always have a glass as you're cooking with it.
That's true. Julia Childs did it.
Yes, And so it'll be interesting. I won't be able to tell the flavor for about 3-4 weeks, because when you make the mustards, you can them, and then you need to let them sit for about 3 or 4 weeks so they really get the whole flavor. So they need to mellow, and they it takes a while to get the full flavor.
So they're, and do you have to strain them or anything? I mean, it's soaking in the beer. These mustard seeds are soaking in the beer, and then what happens to them?
And then you put it in, with this recipe, you put it in the pot, and then there's some extra ingredients, and then it's done. Mustard.
What would be the extra ingredients?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Or is it something, is it common ingredients?
Common ingredients, yeah.
Okay, so it's not like you have to mail away for it or go through the internet or try to do anything like that. Things
easy
that
stuff.
You can easily find.
Easy
okay.
stuff. And the Dijon mustard and the lemon sage, they use onions. And so if you've planted onions and garlic in your gardens and you've got them drying, mm-hmm. it's a great way to use them. And what you do with those two mustards is you cook. They both have wine in them, and so you take a dry white wine, and then you cook the onions, and one of them had some rosemary and black peppercorns, so a variety of spices, and then you cook them, and then after you cook the wine with those onions, you strain it out. And the recipe says to discard the solids, but I had a hard time getting rid of all these cooked onions,
sure.
and I just happened to be making some chicken broth, and so I haven't tried it yet, but we're going to see how it tastes. I took the strained onions, even though it had been cooked with wine and some white wine vinegar also, which you can find easily at the grocery store, and I put it in the crock pot, so we'll see how that impacts the chicken broth. But with there, so you've got this onion and herb infused white wine, and then you soak the mustard seeds in them, and then it's pretty straightforward. You add some white wine vinegar, I forget the other ingredients. The recipes are on freshpreserving.com, this Ball's website.
Freshpreserving.com, okay.
Mm-hmm. But then it's, you know, the hardest part is just letting it soak. Mm-hmm. And that you don't have to do anything with it except let it sit there. And then the same thing with the Dijon mustard, where you mixed white wine vinegar, and then there was some peppercorns, some different spices, and then the mustard seeds. Mm-hmm. Then you strain them, and then you just soak the mustard seeds. And then at that point, you just take the mustard seeds and you grind it up with a little bit of extra water, so it's kind of the consistency of oatmeal. And then you heat it, and then you jar it, and then you go ahead and process it in a canner. And then again, you let it sit for 3-4 weeks.
Mustard is a little, you know, pasty like, or mm-hmm. a little bit thicker. So is it when you grind the mustard seeds with the water, and that becomes more of an oatmeal consistency,
right?
And then you add it with the infused water that mm-hmm. it was soaking in, and that's what gives it that creamy kind of mustard texture.
Yeah, when you do the puree.
When you do mm-hmm. the puree.
And I like to have mine chunkier, and so some recipes call for just ground mustard powder, and then they're very creamy. And then others call for the whole mustard seed, and you grind it, you puree it using a blender or a food processor, and so it gives it that creamier consistency, but you still have the whole mustard seeds, but mm-hmm. they're cooked, so they're not hard and crunchy, so they're soft.
Okay,
yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. And so then you have this product that is creamy, it's mustard, it really is mustard. What if you didn't want to pressure can it, preserve it? Because that's the preserving method.
Right, you don't pressure can it, you use boiling water or a steam canner.
Ooh, I'm glad you corrected mm-hmm. me. And according to the recipe, you would keep it in that situation for maybe a few minutes, or?
At my altitude, at sea level and up to 1,000 feet, you can it at 10 minutes, and so I'm higher than that, so I canned it at 15 minutes. And then I just let it sit on the counter. I clean my jars, and I let it sit on the counter. I put it in the cupboards for 3-4 weeks before I open it up to eat it. It'll be good for up to a year for best quality. It'll last longer than that. But if you didn't want to can it, you could just put it in the refrigerator.
And how mm-hmm. long would it last in the refrigerator, maybe?
You would still need to let it sit for 3 weeks. If it's got you would need to have a vacuum seal, though. That's the issue.
Okay.
Because, you know, once you open things,
right?
So it's best with mustards to can them, so that way you don't have to worry about any pathogens in there. And you fill the jar up to mm-hmm. almost the top. It's just a quarter inch head space, so you have a very full jar. But you have to let it sit for 3 weeks, which is why it's better to can it. Mm-hmm. There's some mustards where you can go ahead and make them, put them in the refrigerator, and you would want to keep them. Well, mustards last a long time, so I don't know mm-hmm. off the top of my head how long, but you need to keep it for 3 weeks. And so the nice thing about the mustards is they usually have some kind of vinegar in there, mm-hmm. and so the vinegar, the acidity, will help prevent the growth of pathogens. Also keeping it in the refrigerator, below 40 degrees, it helps keep the pathogens from growing, because it's a little bit too chilly for them, so they're not going to grow as much.
That's true. Now, the jars, can you use just jars that you find around the house, or do they have to be specific? I mean, you're talking to somebody that doesn't know anything about.
You should use canning jars. A lot of times people will use just regular empty jars, but you don't know if they've been scratched with a knife or a spoon as you clang around to get the food out. You don't know if they're tempered for the boiling water. And I know, like,
I never even thought of that.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Classico with the mason jars, they've got Atlas Mason on their spaghetti jars. We actually contacted them, and they said they don't recommend that you use them. You can, but they don't recommend it because they said there's a slight coating on the inside that they use.
Oh.
And as you take your spoon and you scrape things out, you could scratch the coating, which presents a possible weak spot in the jar. But for the most part, you can use other jars if they're commercial jars, but the recommendation to make sure that you have good success is to use a proper canning jar, because you go through the work of doing this, you don't want to have the jar break.
Right.
So use one that's tempered for the boiling water.
Right. Now, with the lids, too, every once in a while I've talked to people and they talk about reusing their lids. They can reuse the rings that
you
are
can
around?
Reuse the rings, but the lids you should only use one time.
And so there's two parts. There's
two parts.
The ring and then there's the lid.
Correct.
So just the rings you can use.
Mm-hmm.
And once you open up that jar of the mustard and you've gone through it, throw away the top of the lids?
You can, or you can bring them to the Master Food Preserver office or the UC office, because I'm using used lids as magnets, and so I'm sticking a magnet to the back and putting a label on the front, and I'm using them as advertisement for our programs, and I give them out at the county fairs and farmers markets.
So clever.
There's lots of things you can reuse lids for.
Okay,
I have
so you don't have to throw them away.
No, I had one Master Gardener, Master Food Preserver volunteer who would use them, and she would write the different types of beans that she was growing in the garden, so she'd use them as plant markers in the garden.
Oh, that's so clever.
Yeah, and you can reuse them. I usually put an X on a jar, or I write what the product is, or on the lid, so then I know it's used, and that's what I use to store my dried foods, or my when I dehydrate something, you can use the lids for that. You just can't use them for canning again.
Okay.
And this past year, for the Ugly Christmas Sweater Contest,
I saw that picture.
I made an ugly Christmas tree, and I had rings on the sweatshirt or sweater, and then I hung lids on it with images on there and so forth, so you can do fun stuff as well. But you could make a mobile to hang out to, you know, distract the birds from your cherry trees and things like
true.
That.
That's
so
a really
there's a lot
idea.
Of things you can do with them. Just don't can with them again.
Okay, you convinced me. But now, if say for instance, these sound like wonderful flavors that you're doing this time with the mustard, what are maybe some other possible flavors that
well,
might
if
be
I have,
interesting.
If I have time, I'm going to make a honey mustard, which I really like, and I've made a cranberry mustard, and
so you've made the cranberry
I've
mustard.
I've made the cranberry, and I've made the mango.
Okay, so the cranberry, again, you would
it's
soak.
Pink.
It's pink, which is so colorful.
It
and so
is.
It does it, but it still tastes like mustard, right?
It still tastes like mustard because you've got the mustard seeds in there. And with a lot of them, if you eat it too early, it's very strong and overpowering. And so you don't want that because you want to go for a second bite. So it mellows out after 3-4 weeks because depending on the recipe, you may have some garlic in there. And just the pungency of the mustard seeds itself, especially if you have whole mustard seeds in there, it's strong. So you want to let it mellow. But it's nice because the cranberry mustard uses just the ground mustard powder, so it's a bit mellower, and then you've got that fruit flavor in there as well.
Oh,
yeah.
That does sound really nice.
Yeah. Well, the thing I like about the mustards is you're using the ingredients for flavoring. So, for example, the lemon sage wine mustard.
Mm-hmm.
You chop up a small amount of the sage, and so if, you know, end of season sage, you don't have to have the beautiful, perfect leaves. It can be, you know, some can be torn, and because you're going to mince it. And then the rest of the sage, you're chopping up the stems and everything, and you're just infusing the flavor. So it's a great way at the end of the season when you've got some scraggly, sad-looking plants and herbs, you can use those for it. And with the cranberry and the fruits, they can be things that have been in the freezer, so they may not be crunchy and you know, the highest quality, but you're looking for the flavor because you're going to puree it anyway.
Right.
And so it's a great way to use up some of the older fruits.
Great idea. Yeah. And Sue, I hate to say it, but we ran out of time.
That went fast.
It did. So you're going to have to come back again, and I sure thank you.
Thank you very much, Debbie. It was
fun. Okay. It was fun. Bye.
Bye-bye.